welcome you this morning. And as always, we know that there are other places that you could be this morning, and we appreciate the fact that you've chosen to be here with us today. Any of you have nyctophobia? That's a fear of the dark. And some phobias are kind of extreme, and when you think about it, it seems maybe a little bit unusual that someone would have that phobia. But being afraid of the dark is pretty natural, actually. We're vulnerable in the dark. There are bad things that happen in the dark. Evil takes place in the dark. Now, not to the level perhaps of being phobic about it, but it certainly is an understandable fear. We feel safe when the lights are on, and we typically feel not quite so safe when the lights are off. This morning, Jesus, in talking in Luke chapter 11, is going to contrast those two things for us. It's an analogy that he uses over and over again. But I'd like for you, if you would, to go with me to Luke chapter 11. We'll start at verse 33 and go down through verse 36. No one lights a lamp and puts it in a place where it will be hidden, or under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand so that those who come in may see the light. And Jesus said this earlier in this book in Luke chapter 8. He's going to mention it other places, certainly in Matthew. What would be the point of having a lamp that you would hide? Doesn't make any sense at all. And yet, also in that passage is an indication of his reaffirming what our purpose is. Our purpose is to be a light. Our purpose is to illuminate. Our purpose is to reflect the light that God transcends through us. And so, as we think about light and as we can contrast it to dark today, we want to keep in mind the idea that that's what we're here to do. Then going into verse 34, your eye is the lamp of the body. When your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. But when they are unhealthy, your body is also is full of darkness. See to it then that the light within you is not darkness. Therefore, if your whole body is full of light and no part of it is dark, it will be just as full of light as when a lamp shines its light on you. We kind of read those passages, and we have a tendency to look at that first verse and say, okay, I get the first verse. The next three verses kind of get a little bit muddled for us sometimes as we try to distinguish really what Jesus is talking about here. I think one of the things you have to point out from the very beginning is his audience would have heard this message very different from us. Light was a very different thing for them than it is for us today. We no longer have day and night. We're able to transform night into day with all the lighting that's provided. It hasn't been all that long ago in some of our lives when sports teams didn't play at night. There weren't even all of the stadiums that were having that had that capacity because it was expensive and it cost a lot of money. And now we've gotten to the point where we really don't worry about that. If you need to do something in the middle of the night, they just illuminate. You have that opportunity to do that. On the screen is an example of the kind of lights that they had. They would have a small pottery lamp, typically. Into that lamp would go some oil and some kind of a wick, and they would light that, and it would burn. Examples that you can see in the next slide. These are so prolific in our time that you can actually own a first century lamp. You can purchase one for somewhere in the area of $100. So there are people who actually have these things from the first century. They are able to do that. And when you look at it, you kind of get an idea of, you know, we read about Abraham Lincoln, who read by the firelight. This is even further back than that. Look at the tremendous amount of light that's given off there. Look at the trouble that it takes to put the elements together. Look at the risk that's involved. You think this started fires? There was difficulty there. When Jesus talks about a light versus dark, these people have a radically different image that comes into mind than the image we have. We walk in, we flip on a light, we have all the light that we need. If we don't, we put some extra lights there, and we learn how to manage that. We've gotten to the place where we're able to do that. But one thing that is Even more powerful in our time than their time is the contrast. They weren't able to overwhelm the darkness. They were able to fight against it a little bit, but they weren't able to totally take control of it. I'd like for us to focus this morning on verse 34, the first half of verse 34, as we break that down into three pieces. Your eye is the lamp of the body. What comes in is going to have impact. Garbage in, garbage out. What are you seeing? What are you looking at? What are the images that are literally coming into your body? Let's look at three passages together. The first one is from Ephesians chapter 1, verse 18, where Paul says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people. The eyes of your heart. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's not just totally talking about our physical eyes. He's talking about the information that comes into our body that actually gets to our heart. And here again, he's not talking about the heart that pumps blood. He's talking about our spiritual core, the middle part of us that controls us, the middle part where our spiritual learning meets with intellect and knowledge and any number of things. And we have a very difficult time isolating that, because most of us want to be pretty precise. And so as we go about trying to identify various parts of where is this spiritual core, it doesn't truly correlate. It's not the heart. Is it the brain? Yeah, it's somewhat the brain. But it also encompasses our soul and our spirit, and that becomes pretty difficult to define. In Acts chapter 26, verse 18, to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan to God, so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. The work of the apostles was to open their eyes so that they could go from the darkness to the light. They could actually transition from living with evil and involved in sin to a place where that was no longer the case. And then Proverbs chapter 20, verse 27. The human spirit is the lamp of the Lord that sheds light on one's inmost being. Go all the way back to the book of Proverbs, and you find this really interesting kind of explanation about how complicated and how complex this is. And so when Jesus is saying the light that comes into the body, he's not just saying the things that you see. He's talking about, what impact does it have on you? How does it affect your spiritual core? How does it alter who you are and what you are in those situations? And probably some of you are thinking, well, you can't control what you see, can you? Certainly not completely. We had friends years ago that had three sons. All three of them, I believe, were teenagers at the same time. And this was a period of time when there were a lot of billboards around. Billboards have gotten to be not quite as popular, and some of them would be rather risque. And so the dad, when driving, would yell, "Don't look, boys." Well, what do you think happens when dad yells, "Don't look"? And obviously we've gotten into that kind of mindset. How do we keep from seeing something? It's hard to do. And yet, in Job chapter 31, verse 7, a startling statement that Job makes that we don't usually talk about, but it's one that when you look at at Job, you find, if you're looking carefully, Job says simply, "I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman." Job is saying, you can see without seeing. You can know times when your eyes shouldn't be focused in a particular place or on a particular thing or a particular situation. And you do have some control over what you see. You have control over whether you continue to watch or not. You have some opportunities to turn away or to change maybe what's going on. But Jesus is clear here. It's all coming in. Well, what happens next? He says, well, when your eyes are healthy, then a certain thing is going to transpire and take place. Many of you know Pat Stringer. Pat has a brother by the name of Harold, and I've never met Harold, but I know from talking to Pat that Harold is a real character. One time when Pat was still working here at church, she went down to see Harold on the weekend, and he came out to the car, and he said, Pat, I need to tell you something before you go in. He said, I didn't tell the dogs you were coming. I didn't want to ruin their week. That's just the kind of sense of humor that he has. But after he had LASIK surgery, and I know many of you are familiar with that, he said in this dry wit to Pat, Pat, did you know there were other people on the road? His eyes weren't healthy, and he was very glad, and other people were very glad, that he was able to improve that situation. I don't know how many people here today use corrective lenses, but I'm sure there's a very, very strong percentage that do that. We need help with our vision. We don't see things as clearly as we'd like to see, and we're thankful that there are ways that we can correct that or alter that to some degree. Our perspective, though, is critically important to what we're perceiving and what we're bringing into our body. You know, how do I view this? I may see something, and I can obviously categorize it as something that maybe I shouldn't have seen, or something that I don't want to have seen, or I would have been better off not seeing. We look at our perspective as a real important part of that process. Sometimes you run into these people, you know, they're incredibly pessimistic, and they see the world through pessimistic glasses. Everything is bad. Everything is wrong. I remember an elderly lady years ago that she would, when you went to see her, she would just cry because nobody ever came to see her. And she spent all the time talking about how people had abandoned her and they had left her and why didn't more people, and it was such a negative situation that you could easily see the spiral that was taking place there. Other times you see people who are just eternally optimistic. I know a guy, and he said that if he wrecked his car, if he turned his car over, he'd just figure that was a good time to grease it. Well, you know, sometimes you can be too optimistic. And these people that are constantly pessimistic or constantly optimistic are filtering things through a particular eye set. And Jesus is reminding us here that the things you see sometimes are pretty strongly altered by the filters that you're wearing. What filters do you wear? We see different things. We interpret it different ways. We categorize it very differently because we're going through a filtering process. And if you're in that place where everything looks bad, you know how hard it can be to overcome that. Sometimes we're actually spinning things for ourselves. So it looks bad, but no, it's not really. Or it's different than the way it's being taken in. And so Jesus is saying, be sure that your eyesight is coming through me. And then finally, he says, your whole body is full of light. How many of you today feel like you're all light inside? Like, light just fills you, and light radiates from you. That because of who you are, and because of what you believe, because of the way you approach life, because of the information that you take in, I'm just filled with light. We may have, typically, I would think, moments where maybe it feels that way, but often I would suspect that most of us wrestle with the possibility that there's darkness in us. It feels kind of dark, and it feels kind of dangerous. And when Jesus says, when your whole body is full with light, we're like, I'd like to be there, but that's really not where I am at all. I want to share with you a personal experience. The only reason I share my experience is because it's the only one that I have, and it's the only one that I can feel comfortable sharing. I know others have similar kinds of experiences. About a month ago, I got to a place where I felt like the darkness was winning. Some of the things that were going on, there was a family that I was connected with at that time who had lost a preschool child in an accident. And I wasn't involved with counseling. I was just involved with the family and talking and trying to help. But the grief of that was so overwhelming. The pain of that was just palpable. And it really started to pull me in a negative direction. There were people that I knew and people that I care about who were struggling with illness, and people that they loved who were not doing well at that particular point in time. I was asked to do a funeral for a lady that was one of the sweetest people I've ever known in my life, just a wonderful woman. It was a pleasure to be able to talk about her. But somehow, as I was there and remembering her life, and especially as I looked out over the audience and I saw so many people there that I cared about, and I couldn't ignore the fact that all of us had gotten a whole lot older. And the thought goes through my mind, are there people here today where I'm going to be doing this similar kind of thing for? Or could it be that they're going to be doing this for me? And the darkness starts to creep in. And then there's life stresses, and there's all those normal events that take place on a regular basis. You look into media, and whether it's the TV or a news magazine or the radio, you continue to hear these negative things. And you can very easily get to the place where, boy, it feels really, really dark. There's a lot of darkness. And even if you try to look for light, there's not much light sometimes to find. So what do we do in those situations? Well, I think there are lots of things that we can do. First of all, we go to spiritual resources. And Philippians chapter 4 gives us that excellent place to start, this passage that we all know so very well. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Think about the good stuff. Think about the positive relationships. Think about the wonderful experiences. Relive those valid and pleasurable memories. And give yourself an opportunity to get just really kind of going there. I think things like what we do today. We actually come together to spend some time not focusing on the negative things, but focusing on some spiritual things. And hopefully in that process, we meet each other and we encourage each other and we build each other up and we cause people to enjoy just a few moments, especially the time that we spend in the foyer before and after church, where we can connect and really have some fellowship, not a long period of fellowship, but just some time where we can encourage each other. Maybe you find that going out into nature put some light back into your life. Maybe exercise is something that helps you. To serve somebody else. To make a sacrifice in some way. To be involved in something that's funny or maybe a little bit humorous. One of the things that I have enjoyed personally is some experiences with Habitat for Humanity. You know, it's really painful to go into areas where, around here, particularly where tornadoes have torn houses down. And that brings darkness. But the opportunity to be involved with putting something back is something that has a tendency to bring some light into your life instead of the dark. Now, in our world, a lot of times when you say you're experiencing darkness, people think you mean depression. And there's a difference between darkness and depression. And if you'd like to talk more about that, I'd certainly be willing to discuss that on a private, personal kind of level. But this morning, where I'm coming from with darkness is that darkness is rooted in evil. There's evil in our lives. And you say, well, I didn't do anything wrong here. But if you'll trace it back to its beginning, its origin, you'll typically find that somebody did. There's evil that contributes to these many negative things in our lives. You turn the TV on and somebody shot up a school. There's evil that's going on there. You see a theft. You listen to somebody gossip. You witness character assassination. These things are rooted in evil. And that's that darkness that's being referred to. Many of you remember Monty Williams, the coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He was an assistant coach. His wife was killed in a car accident in February of 2016. She didn't do anything wrong. She was driving a car, taking her children to the various appointments that they needed transportation for. Somebody else took methamphetamines and veered across the lane. And instead of driving 40, were driving 80 when they crashed into her car. And watching her husband has been a true learning experience for a lot of people. The courage that he showed at her memorial service, when he stood up and said that he was forgiving the woman who had caused the accident. And watching his life since then is impressive as well. A year or so after that, he would say in an interview, "You can't give in. You can't lose to this darkness that's in life." He went back and worked for the San Antonio Spurs for a couple of years in their front office. And some of you know from media that this year he's back coaching again with the Philadelphia 76ers. He's trying to put his life back together. He's moving forward. And every time you hear information coming from him, it's about, "I'm not going to let this terrible thing take over my life." This morning, I'm sure that you could look and say, "Boy, there's a lot of darkness in my life." The things you were talking about for you don't even begin to compare to the things that I'm wrestling with and dealing with. And that's valid. It truly is. But Jesus knows that these things can overwhelm us. They can overtake us. And we can get to the place where light becomes almost non-existent. And darkness is so totally and completely there. Let me share with you a few more passages. John chapter 3, verse 19. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. And we see that going on all around us. Romans chapter 13, verse 12. "The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light." And that's a call to us as the people of God to do just exactly that. This morning, as we conclude this time together, I had planned to read John chapter 1, verse 5, but somebody else has already done that this morning. Those first five verses of the book of John are so powerful. And God is saying to us that the light is going to be victorious. That's exactly what's going to happen. And then if you go to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. "For you were once in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light." That's what Jesus was telling this crowd. That's the information that he was giving to them. And that's what he desires for us. We remove the darkness. We remove the evil. We remove the sin. And we live in light. This morning, you may feel like, "Boy, there's a lot of darkness in my life. Darkness is overwhelming me. Darkness is taking me over." Or if I allow this darkness to continue at its current rate of development, I'm going to wind up in a very bad place. And this morning, if you need help in that regard, we'd be glad to help you. We'd be glad to provide whatever information that would be useful. You may need somebody to pray with you. You may need to confess that darkness. You may need to state publicly that you want some accountability as you move forward there. If there's something that we can do to help you, we'd be glad to do that. I mention often Raymond Kelsey. Seems the older I get, the more appreciation I have for him, one of my teachers in college. And I can remember on several occasions, young men would say to Dr. Kelsey, "What's the role of an evangelist?" And he would say, "To reflect the light of Jesus with as little distortion as possible." And that's an excellent description. And in reality, that's not just a description for evangelists. That's a description for every Christian person. That we reflect Jesus' light and we provide as little distortion as possible. This morning, if you need to respond to your God, if you need to respond and accept a Savior, if you need to put on Jesus in baptism, if there's any need that you have today, if you want more information, we'd be glad to assist you in that as we stand and sing this song together.